Welcome to the Subject Composition and Light Photography Podcast. Show notes, links, and contact details can be found at robnunphoto.com. That's www.robnunphoto.com. SCL is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network, and loads of other great tech podcasts can be found over at www.techpodcast.com. Now on with the show. Hi and welcome to SCL episode 109 for the 8th of August 2010. My name's Rob from robnunphoto.com and this is my little podcast following my journeys through the world of photography and I guess trying to become a better photographer, but it's really more just of what I've done this week and what I've been thinking about. So what have I been up to this week? Well, luckily enough I managed to get down to Leon Solent, one of the local beaches, and take some nice sunset shots. This time of year is great for sunsets because it's nice and warm when you go down to the beach and you can set your tripod up and do a lot of experimenting, and you tend to get lots of nice colour as well, some really spectacular reds, orange and pinks in the sunsets. And because we live fairly close to the coast, there's Leon Solent's only about 5 minutes away in the car, so if I look out the window or Suzanne looks out the window and says, oh gosh, look, there's some beautiful colour this evening, I can often just jump in the car, steam down there, set up the tripod, take some shots and kind of be home again in about an hour. So anyway, the other night there was quite a lot of colour in the sky, so I raced down there, and what I tend to do is set up my camera on the tripod first. Use the 350D with the 28mm lens on it, because that's the one I tend to like to use the most, because it's wide angle. And when I used to shoot with the Fujifilm S5700, I would set up on the tripod and again go to the wide angle and choose quite a tight aperture, so something f8 and above, to try and get as much of the scene in focus as possible. And what I was trying to do when I went down to the beach this week was there wasn't lots and lots of colour in the sky. There was orange on the horizon where the sun was dipping down over Fawley and the sort of the power station over there and the oil refinery. But the rest of the sky was fairly boring. It was just, you know, normal sort of blue colours. There wasn't this big sheet of red you sometimes get when there's lots of high clouds. And so what I was trying to do was capture some of the reflection of the sunset in the water, but that wasn't really happening because the water was lapping in and out fairly languidly, I guess, is that a word? So it wasn't like a mill pond, so I couldn't get a really good reflection. I was shooting right into the sun, so I kept getting flare as well all over the lens. But what I was trying to do, and if you look on the show notes over at robnunphoto.com for show 109, you'll see the photograph, the best one. What I was trying to do was trying to get this kind of symmetry between the angle of the cloud and the sky and the angle of the water coming in sort of on the beach. I had to use the tripod quite high because I wanted to see over the wooden breakwaters that go out into the sea in this part of Leon Solent. And what I ended up doing was actually the tripod and me was kind of standing in the water because the water kept coming in and rushing over the feet of the tripod and my feet as I was trying to sort of get this shot. And by choosing a nice tight aperture, I can't remember what it is, if you look at the EXIF data you see, but it's probably something like f8 or f16, something like that, you get this star effect of the sun, or any sort of lights. I'm not quite sure what the reason for that is, but at very small apertures, your lens kind of acts like a like a star filter, and that can look quite pretty. And what I was trying to do was just trying to catch the sun as it was dipping below the horizon, so to get quite a nice shot, and I think it came out quite nice. The other thing I did that was different as well for this particular series of shots was actually shot in JPEG rather than RAW, because the previous week when I'd taken some sunset shots, I'd had a bit of trouble converting the colours in Photoshop, and I was getting a bit frustrated trying to get the reds really natural. And if you look at my photo stream and go back and look at the previous sunset shots, you'll see that they're a bit pink, and they're a little bit pinker than they really were in real life, and although they look interesting and the shots look nice, they do have a little bit of a HDR kind of look to them, you know, like an artificial colour. And I was playing around with them, I just couldn't get them to come out the colour I wanted to, so I thought, right, this time I'm just going to shoot in JPEG and rely on the camera kind of baking in the white balance and getting the colour right. And I was quite happy with the results, apart from the fact, and if you look at the photographs you'll see, if you look in the top right hand corner, well, just a little bit down from it, there's a big splodge, which is sensor dust, because I was shooting at a tight aperture. What you tend to find is that if you've got any rubbish on your sensor, that shows up really well, that you wouldn't normally see when you're shooting at like f8 and below, which is a shame. And I didn't spot it in post-processing, otherwise I would have just used the healing clone brush in Photoshop and got rid of it in about 10 seconds. But I did look around the photo, but I didn't see that particular little splodge, which is a bit annoying. I mean, while I was down there, I did try shooting some different angles, because I know that sunsets are a little bit cliched. I tried shooting the huts that are down there at this part of Leon Solent, but there wasn't really much colour going on. All the colour was really on the horizon, everything else was just looking a little bit greyish. And I took some shots of some seagulls as well, but there's nothing particularly special. But that particular photo I've put on the show notes I quite liked, because I like the colours and I like the sea, and it all looks very nice and relaxing. Now, as you know, Sunday car boot sale. So what did I get today? Well, I actually saw two cameras, but I only went for one. The first camera I saw was at Bridge Mary, and that was a Fujifilm Instax 100 camera. Because, you know, I'm kind of into I'm saying I'm into instant photography at the moment. I haven't actually taken any instant photographs. I'm just into buying instant cameras. Well, I guess I'm looking out for them at the car boot sale more. And I saw an Instax 100, but I thought, I've already got an Instax 200 that I got last week, so I sort of left that one. But when we went to the car boot sale up at near Titchfield, the posh car boot sale, I picked up a very nice Polaroid. And it's a Polaroid land camera, model 1000, and I think it's called a one step as well, I think in America. And it's quite an old camera, and this one actually came with a flash, a Polartronic 1 electronic flash, and the instructions as well for the flash and the camera. Not that you really need many. It's a plastic camera using SX70 film, so it's one of the budget ones. I think it has a plastic lens. This one actually has got film inside it, but unfortunately the battery has gone flat in the film, so it doesn't work, because unlike Fuji film instant cameras with Polaroids, the battery was actually inside the film itself, which means that if the battery goes flat on old film, it just stops working. Where obviously with Fujifilm, what you could do is the batteries are in the camera, so you can even use old film without having to worry about the battery having expired. But I'm going to leave the film in there until I figure out what I can do with it, because it looks like I just had a quick peer at it. Obviously the top sheet will have fogged instantly, but the stuff underneath may well be usable. So I've been hunting a little bit around the web to see if there's any way you can use old instant film without a battery, and I'm not sure how you would do it, because the shutters wouldn't fire in the camera and all this sort of stuff. But maybe there's some way to make use of that film before I throw it away. As I say, it uses SX70 Polaroid film, which they stopped making late 90s, I think, something like that, and it was replaced by 600 series instant film. SX70 was the first, when it came out in the early 1970s, was the first instant film that you didn't need to peel apart. So it just came out of the camera, and you sort of let it set, and then you'd have your photograph. And it was very popular, and still is popular today, actually, because of the fact that it takes longer to set the SX70 than the new 600 stuff that they don't make anymore either. So it was popular amongst arty types who could manipulate the Polaroids. You can imagine you get a Polaroid image out of your camera, and then using various implements or your fingers, you push the emulsion around on the photograph to have lots of weird effects. But yeah, I mean, it's a dead simple little plastic camera. It has one button to operate the shutter. It has an exposure compensation dial, I guess, that covers the sensor. A fixed focus plastic lens. It's got, I think it has a little counter on the back, and as I say, it's got this electronic flash that they say only put on when you want to take flashes. So it's quite a big thing, this flash, so you need quite a big bag for everything. But it's a nice looking camera. It's very 70s kind of futuristic, you know, what people thought in the 1970s would have been futuristic. And as I say in the quote underneath the Flickr photograph, it just kind of reminds me of Space 1999, I think because of the font they use to write like 1000, but also it's got like this grey colour and then this rainbow stripe running sort of up and down it on the body of the camera and the body of the flash. And I'm sure that in Space 1999, the astronauts, there was something to do with a rainbow stripe in there, wasn't there? Those of people who remember back to that classic cult television series of the 1970s and the early 1980s, I think. But anyway, so why bother getting an old Polaroid camera that they don't make the film for anymore? Well, Polaroid don't make the film for the don't make SX70 film anymore. But there's a thing called the Impossible Project that does. And the Impossible Project started up last year, and it's a group of guys, I think in Belgium, who bought an old Polaroid factory and all the machines in it, and are busily recreating and trying to, and selling Polaroid film. 600 film, SX70 film, and I don't know the name of it, but there's another type of film as well. For another type of Polaroid camera, and they're doing mono film, and I do believe they've just released a colour film. It's not the cheapest stuff in the world. I think you're looking at about £17 for 8 photographs, so it's not something that I would dive into as a regular photographic experience, but I guess I'll treat myself maybe to a pack of it. It's nothing like the old Polaroid sort of colour film, if you remember it from shooting 600 series film. You know, it's really experimental, the stuff the guys at the Impossible Project is doing. The monotone stuff comes out very dreamy, and the colour stuff looks... the best way is go to the Impossible Project site over at... just Google Impossible Project and it will come up. But as I say, it's very experimental. All sorts of strange things are happening to this film over time, because you know they haven't been going that long, and they're having to come up with all these chemical processes to create this wonderful instant film. And things aren't... You're on the cutting edge. It's almost like you're a tester for them by buying the film, because they're trying to make it better, and it's going to take a while. And I guess in time it may well get cheaper. But I just couldn't resist this camera when I saw it anyway, the Polaroid 1000 using SX70 film. So yeah, that's a nice little gadgets, nice little bit of history as well. Now, the other thing I was going to say as well, remember that Polaroid, although they kind of went bankrupt and went bust, they are kind of re-emerging into the instant market again with the Polaroid 300. Which is a mini instant camera that produces instant photographs about the size of a credit card, and that's something. It hasn't really been available in the UK. I think it's available in the States and definitely in Japan, and there's loads on eBay. But I'm keeping my eyes out for one of them to see if I can grab one of those, and probably not the Polaroid version of it, but maybe the Fujifilm version. But that looks really exciting as well, as long as they keep the film cheap. I mean, that's the classic thing, you know. I mean, you've got to think, if you were going to get 20 shots out of a twin pack of film, how much would you want that to cost? You know, bear in mind that a roll of 35mm film is what, you know, £3-4 to get you a really nice roll. you know, how much we'd pay for a twin pack of a Polaroid film. And I think, you know, they've got to get it round about, if it's round about £10, you know, you could afford £10 a month, couldn't you, to shoot 20 photographs of Polaroid film, you know, 50p a shot, that would be okay. Because it's not until you really think about it and you look at a Polaroid camera or a Fuji instant camera how wonderful it is that it works, and the fact that you've got the lens on the front where the light's coming in, and then you've got all this, you've got a whole film factory, a whole photography lab inside the camera that is the enlarger and the developer, and it does it all in a matter of seconds. And I really hope they make a success of it, and we bring back instant photography into our lives. Okay, so before we get onto the main subject, which may actually be shorter than the introduction this week, need to talk about GoToMeeting, our fabulous sponsors. GoToMeeting is a way that you can have meetings with people all over the world at your PC and them at their PC, where you're going to be talking over voice, over internet, telephony, just like Skype. But the beauty of it is that the other people at the meeting can see what's on your computer screen, so you can show them Word documents, you can show them PowerPoint presentations, you can show them Excel spreadsheets, you can show them the photographs of your kids, whatever you want to do, you can show them that, and you can talk about what's on your screen, and you can talk about the issues involved, and it's a lot more interactive than just having a boring telephone conference call where people are just reading the newspaper, reading a magazine, and not really being interested in what you're talking about, not buying in to the subjects that you're talking about, and, you know, not being very productive at all. Now, obviously, you could meet face to face. I mean, in an ideal world, we'd all like to meet face to face, wouldn't we, and have meetings, but because of the cost of time, the incredibly expensive cost of travel these days as well, GoToMeeting is an excellent way of reducing those costs and still having a productive meeting where people can interact and see what's on your computer screen, and you can share documents and images and spreadsheets and pie charts and all that sort of stuff really, really easily. And all you've got to do is try out GoToMeeting, because you can get it free for 30 days. Just go to gotomeeting.com/techpodcasts. That's gotomeeting.com/techpodcasts for a free 30-day trial. Check it out. I'm sure you'll really like it for business needs, and then become a subscriber. Right, what I wanted to talk about in the main kind of section of the podcast tonight was RSS feeds. Now, I think I've talked about this before on SEL. I went through the show notes, well, the show titles of previous shows, and couldn't find a reference to it. But since I've got my new mobile smartphone, my Android phone, a few months ago, I've really got into RSS again. Now, RSS, or it tends to be called really simple syndication, is a way that you can subscribe to various websites and other things and have that content delivered to your what's called an RSS reader for you to read at your leisure. So imagine all your favorite blogs, say your favorite photography blogs, which could be, say, Joe McNally's blog, that's really good, Scott Kelby's Photoshop Insider blog, who else is there that I think is really good, like the say my blog, robnofaro.com, if you like reading that one. What else could there be? Actually, I'm going on to my reader now to see what blogs I've got on there. Something like, I'm just pausing waiting for my thing to start, The Online Photographer, all things like that. How do you fancy, instead of having to visit all those individual blogs and websites, you know, through favourites on your internet browser, why not have them delivered to you? So when Scott Kelby writes a new post, it gets delivered to your computer or your phone or your laptop, or when Joe McNally writes a new article, that gets delivered to your reader, wherever that might be. And I found RSS brilliant, mainly because the way I consume RSS now tends to be on my my mobile phone, because my Android mobile phone, the HTC Desire, does have a really nice Google nice reader on it, which just happens to be the mobile version of Google Reader. And so what Google Reader is it's a program, just like Gmail or any online program, that sucks in all the RSS feeds that you want and then displays them for you to read them in a big long list. And so what that means that I can do is that when I find a website or a blog that I really like, you just copy the URL of the homepage, tends to be of the website, copy that into Google Reader, and Google Reader will then check to see if there's an RSS feed. If there is, it will then add that to my list of feeds. And then what I do is all my favourite ones I put into a bundle. I put them into something called Rob's Photo Magazine, which is my own personal collection of all these feeds that come in and out. And then what I tend to do is, over time, this bundle kind of changes. I'll put feeds in, but if after a while I don't particularly like what's been written in, or they're a bit boring, I'll take them out. Or, excuse me, what happens with some RSS feeds, they don't give you the full article, they only give you chunks of it, and sometimes I can't be bothered to visit the site, so I'll get rid of them. And then you end up with this like personalised photo magazine that whenever you've got 5 minutes, like when you're in the queue at the post office, and when you're on your lunch break at work, or when you're just sitting down, you can just flick on your mobile phone or maybe your laptop or your computer, go to Google Reader or the mobile version of Google Reader, and literally you've got all this this stuff. So for example, if I look down my one now, what have I got in here? I've got flare and glare test from the online photographer. I've got a thing from Photo Focus. How do I get my Lightroom DNG files into Aperture 3? A nice article from the online photographer about colour imaging constraints. A funny article from the Jaded Snapper, which is always a good laugh. And then the other thing you can do with RSS, which is really clever, is you can also subscribe to other things. And the main one that's really great for photographers is you can subscribe to people's photo streams in Flickr. So next time you're on Flickr and you're looking at somebody's photo stream, you know, you click on their name and it has photo stream, click on there. That if you copy that URL and paste it into Google Reader, it will find the RSS feed for their photo stream and feed that in as well. So literally you can get daily updates of your favourite photographers on Flickr into your Google Reader. And this is a fantastic way of just looking at more and more great photographs. And one of the ways that we know that we can get better as photographers is by looking at great photographs. And a couple of the blogs I like looking at are Jasmine Starr's wedding photography blog, and Becca as well. He's another great wedding photographer. And what those two are really good at doing is they write these great articles about weddings and engagement shoots and things they've been doing, but they also include lots of their fantastic images as well. So, I mean, I'm not, you know, planning to become a wedding photographer anytime soon, but I would like to be able to take some nice portraits. And these guys are really good at it. And there you have, you know, every day you flick on your phone and then you've got like four or five really nice top level wedding portraits or engagement shoot portraits you can look at and go, oh yeah, that's really nice. And you can see the style, and these photographs are starting to sort of seep into your subconscious. So the next time you go out, you say, right, I want to take a nice portrait photograph. Right, let me think back to what is a good portrait photograph. Well, you've been looking at them for the last several months via your RSS feed from people like Becca or Jasmine Starr or any other wedding photographer or portrait photographer who has a blog, who publishes it to it, and you can look at the stuff. And you can get RSS feeds from people like David Hobby at The Strobist. Any blog out there will have an RSS feed, so you can get it to feed into your particular reader. And as I say, if you have a mobile device like an iPhone or an Android phone or a BlackBerry, I'm pretty sure BlackBerry's probably have an RSS reader, or you know, you've got an iPod Touch, or you maybe use your laptop, you can access that content anywhere. Because remember, if you're using a Google product like Google Reader, there's no program on your computer, there's no program on your phone. All it is an internet page. So when you sit down at work, you could go open up a separate window, know, go to Google Reader, sign in, and then you've got your personalised photo magazine there. Now, what I've done is, if you go over to roblandphoto.com and just look for the show notes for show 109, which should be, you know, right at the top. If you listen to this in the sort of the first week or so that the podcast is published, if you go to the bottom of the show notes, you'll see there's a link to grab Google Reader, but there's also a link to grab a whole bunch of feeds that I've created that can get you started. To almost every single feed that I think is good. There's probably some that you won't like in there. Maybe some that you'll like and you'll keep. But you can customize it as you go on, and that will give you a really good start. There's people like Scott Kelby's blog in there, Joe McNally's blog in there, Jasmine Starr's blog, Becca's blog, Luminous Landscape. Some interesting Flickr photographers, their photographs will appear in there. The top interesting photographs on Flickr will appear in there every day, all that sort of stuff. So if you have never used RSS before, or you've used it and you weren't that particularly impressed, well, all I'm saying is give Google Reader a go, just go over there, sign in, create an account, get it fired up, and especially if you've got a mobile device like an Android phone or an iPhone or anything like that, try Google Mobile Reader to give yourself this fantastic free mobile content that you can access from anywhere and enjoy at any time. Whew, there we go, a bit of an evangelist for RSS, aren't I? So, well, that's it for this week. As usual, all the thanks have got to go out, because that's the type of guy I am. I'd like to thank Everyday Jones, who do the intro and outro music for the podcast. You can find their stuff for free download at podsafeaudio.com. Thanks everybody for putting their photographs into the Flickr forum, the group over there, and taking part in the photo assignments and taking part in the discussion. That's really good. Thanks everybody for commenting on robinonphoto.com. But most of all, I'd like to thank you for downloading and listening to the podcast. My name's Rob from robinonphoto.com. Remember, you can contact me with comments, questions, anything to do with the podcast or site at scalespeeder@gmail.com. But for now, that's it. But hopefully, pretty soon, I'll be seeing you on Flickr.